Okay, has anyone joined since we started recording? Okay, we record these.
Yeah. Hi, this is Abby from Auberly.
Hey, Abby. Okay. And someone else?
Hi, Michael. This is Channing from EPA.
Hey, Channing. EPA. Okay, well, we'll get started. There might be some people that'll join. And what we're going to do today, we've got a lot of things going on with regard to the all-grantee meeting and things going on with EPA. Then we're going to talk about partnership development. We may not get too far into that, and if we miss it, we'll continue on the next one. We also, and we've talked just before we started the call, starting to just see what's going on around the country and interesting news, as we've said, people are starting to reopen a little bit. So we'll wind that up, and we try not to keep you too long today. But we always get started with news from HMTRI in Washington, and we'll turn that over to Heather and Steve. Heather?
All right. Hello, everyone. And I do apologize. I got a little bit more ambient noise today than I typically do. But we're glad you all were able to join us today. Just to get you guys started with news from HQ, you know, not a ton of news right now. It does look like the RFA is on the horizon, so you guys are doing a great job, hopefully getting some of your prep work done, your background work done. As always, we do remind you guys, you know, there's some great things you could be doing, a little bit of homework to get you guys rolling. We have a fantastic Getting Started section on the brownfield-toolbox.org. That's a great repository to look at lots of different things to help getting those EWJT programs started. We also, under our Downloads tab, have a great section as well. That'll really let you be able to explore the 8 critical components and best practices of those really strong brownfields programs. So that's another really great resource to explore. And also for those of you that might have been looking at some of those fantastic PLC notes that Mike sends out, you might have seen too, he's been sending out some of the fiscal year 20, that's last year's 20, some of the resources that EPA put out for the last RFP last year. That includes some of like the frequently asked questions and things like that. Now those are outdated, those are not for the current RFA that's due to come out, but those are some good things to get your brain thinking and moving in the right direction and helping you prepare for the one that is due to come out for fiscal year 21. Now those of you might have caught that I'm using different acronyms for this year versus last year's. They are changing it to a request for applications, so we are calling it an RFA instead of a request for proposal or RFP. And really all that's doing is kind of changing around where some of the pieces of the paperwork fall in the process. So if you hear us talking about an RFA, a request for application, we still are talking about that RFP process that we used to know and talk about quite heavily. So the RFA is looking like it should be coming on the horizon very soon. So just, you know, keep your gears rolling and preparing for those types of things. So in the HMTRI side of the things, we are all very excited. Mike, Steve, and I have been working very hard planning for the virtual 2020 All Grantee Meeting. We are very excited about this one. The virtual All Grantee Meeting will be held at your location, wherever it happens to be around the nation, on August 11th through the 13th. And we will be holding it from 12 o'clock to 3 o'clock Eastern. So that's the time frame that we're going to be doing at across those days. With a little bonus session on the 12th that might run a little bit later, but that's kind of an optional session that we hope everybody can attend. And we're really excited about it. This is all kind of a new process to us. It's something that we've kind of developed on the fly as things have changed in response to kind of the changing world that we live in. But we're really looking forward to it. So day one is going to be really heavy. We've got a couple of plenary sessions with one breakout session. So we'll have a couple plenaries and then one breakout session where you actually get to talk to some of your regional coordinators. And then day two and day three will be a series of breakout sessions where you get to choose which one out of three that you'll get to go into. So it should be a lot of fun. for those of you who have attended all grantee meetings in the past, it's going to feel very, very similar to what you have had before. It'll be very reminiscent to those meetings. For those of you who this might be your first time checking it out, it'll be a wonderful opportunity to really engage in all of those environmental workforce development and job training topics that'll be relevant and of interest to you. So we really hope that you come and join us in this fantastic event. It is a free cost associated with attending this year's All Grantee meeting, especially since there is no travel this year because you're doing it at your location. So we are really excited and looking forward to you guys joining us at this event. If anybody has any questions or would like to learn a little bit more about what we are thinking for this virtual All Grantee meeting, you can always reach out to me. I'm going to give you my email address here, but you'll also hear it a couple times typically throughout these phone calls. Just shoot me a message. You can reach me at hkballou@eicc.edu. Now, we are also changing up our registration process for this year, too, so we do appreciate your patience with that. We do have a few folks that are on a list. We have kind of an informal list of folks that are kind of unofficially registered for the All Grantee meeting. But we're actually going to be sending you out a link here end of this week. And what that's going to let you do is not only register for the All Grantee meeting, but you're actually even going to pick which session you attend to. So because of the virtual format, you actually have to commit to a certain breakout session, commit to which one that you're going to attend. And that will really let us be able to know exactly which folks are going to be attending which session. And that's really important this year because of the virtual format and how we're going to have to structure the meeting. So again, any questions, just send me a message, give me a call. I am happy to chat with you guys more about it. But I'm actually going to turn it over to Steve, and he's going to kind of talk to you guys a little bit more on some details and some more assistance that we might be needing from you guys for the All Grantee meeting.
Okay. Thanks, Heather. All of you should have received or will be receiving today probably an email from us, either through the listserv or a general email. Asking for some help. There's a couple things specifically. One, we're looking for volunteers to co-facilitate the breakout sessions. And what this means is to help, basically help, you know, guide the discussion, looking at the talking points, making sure the conversations are on track. This doesn't mean you would be, you know, giving a presentation for 40 minutes or talking for 40 minutes straight, but basically, you know, serving as a co-facilitator for the session. And the sessions basically are listed on the attachments, the talking points that listed what all of the sessions are. So if you would like to volunteer to co-facilitate a breakout session, we would really appreciate your help. So please let us know. A couple other things we mentioned in the email that went out. We're also looking for examples of student experiences in attending your programs. You might call them testimonials. We look at them as experiences of your former students. If you have any of those or could arrange to collect some and send them to us beforehand, that would be great as well. We would like to showcase some of the students who've gone through, especially for those who, you know, it's really made an impact on their life and to hear their stories and so forth. And along those lines, we're also looking at doing showcasing programs through a video tour of your facility. If you could arrange to take a video, you could even use like a cell phone video of your facility and kind of explain the operation and what we're looking at. Basically a short description of your facility and your program to share with others, that would be awesome as well. And then lastly, the fourth thing is if you have any questions for the regional coordinator breakout sessions, if you could forward those to us ahead of time, we would like to pass those on to the regional coordinators. And, you know, there might be some research involved. And if they have questions that you might have in advance, that would really be great. For us to be able to pass those on and let them kind of look at getting the answers. So those are four things that we're basically looking your help for. Of course, the looking are trying to collect student experiences or doing a video tour of a program, you know, that would be great if you could do that. But obviously some of you are in situations with COVID-19 that you wouldn't maybe necessarily be able to do that. And we certainly wouldn't want you to put yourself or anyone else at risk. So if it's possible to do things like that, we'd really appreciate it. And my name is Stephen Fenton, and I'm working with HMTRI, and my email address is listed in the email. So please let me know if you're interested. We would really like to collect this information as soon as possible. We're looking at trying to have a deadline of like July 7th. So if you could send us any of that information, we'd really appreciate it. Thanks.
Okay. Well, for those of you who have not been to an all-grantee meeting, the all-grantee meeting is as good or as bad as the participants. The experts are the people who attend, because we all recognize that you're really the experts. And maybe you haven't done everything exactly right, but you've also come across some strategies that really work for you. So the purpose of the all-grantee meeting is to get everyone in a group brain, so to speak, get everyone exchanging ideas. And every grantee is a little different. You've got different target groups. You've got different communities. You're working on different emphasis on different parts of the cleanup activity. So you're all different, but the idea is we mix up what are you doing, what are you doing. Here's our circumstance. We're working with this particular target group, and this is what works and this isn't what works. So that when everyone goes home, they can pick up little tidbits of things that were very similar to their situation, and they might decide to try it. And we found grantees who have tried some things that really worked, and they changed their grant around, and they really felt that it was a benefit to them. But none of that works if we don't get ideas out on the table. And so the breakouts, and the first day is going to be plenaries, and we'll have a chance to talk to David Lloyd and the project officers and Channing, and we'll talk to the regional coordinators, which are also very key to implementation of your grant. You'll have a chance to break out with your regional coordinator and ask them questions. And as Steve said, if you have any questions, not just of the regional coordinator, but if you have questions of David Lloyd, of Channing or of us, just jot them down. You don't have to be in any formal sense. Send them to either Heather or to Steve, or just respond to these notes that I'll be sending out on Friday and say, okay, I've got this particular question, and don't worry about if it's something that we may have touched on or didn't, or it's something that's of concern. Just give us a heads up, and that way some of the questions in running these environmental workforce development job training programs are kind of sticky, and we could pass some of the more difficult governmental type questions, policy, EPA policy questions on up to Channing and to David, and they can review them and have a chance to respond to them rather than doing it on the fly. So anything you feel and any constructive comments, you're going to be getting copies of the agenda for the 3 days, and it's going to be a challenge for all of us because 3 hours is a lot of time, particularly if you're on Zoom. So we're going to have breaks, and we're going to, I think the breakout sessions will help. And of course, because of the way that Zoom works, we're going to have to pre-assign everyone to their workout. So that's another good reason to respond to your registration when it comes out to which breakouts you want to go to so we could sign you up. Because logistically, the way these things work, that'll happen in the back office where you'll be switched over to a breakout Zoom session, and it won't be like our traditional face-to-face where you could move around from room to room. So we're going to try to do the best we can on that. And any help you can give us, we're going to try to break it up with videos. I think it's going to be really interesting if you can take your camera on your phone and just walk through your facility and just talk about it. This is where we do this. This is where we do fit up. This is where our instruction. Don't worry about providing some unbelievable quality of video or anything else, camera videos would be great, and then send them to Steve. And I think everyone will benefit because not a lot of us get to go into other people's training facilities and see what they're doing. So I think that would be really helpful. It would be a chance to showcase your facility and a chance for everyone to see what it's like in some of the different parts of the country. So with all of that, we've got, as I said, a lot going on. And on top of the virus, we've got the EPA RFA coming out. And that's going to be really exciting. When that starts, we start the countdown of about 60 days to respond. And, of course, we'll be busy with the PLCs on what you may want to consider when you're responding to those ranking criteria. One of the things, if you've been reading the PLC notes, we've been trying to get people prepped to what you may want to do before the RFA comes out and immediately after it comes out before you start too far into writing your grant. And I would say today, and we're looking at a very short time before it comes out, it may come out before the next PLC. So we will send everyone a copy of the RFA as soon as we get it. If they have not issued Q&As, we'll probably also provide you with Q&As from the last round. Those are very helpful. If they do a webinar presentation, then they will go through the RFA and talk about all the points, the high points, any changes, things that you need to watch out for in terms of writing the proposal properly and correctly. That's a little different than what we're going to be talking about. We'll be talking about how you may want to respond to some of those questions. But they also have RFAs, which I find are really helpful. And these are questions people have had over the years. The ones we'll send out some RFQs that may be old, but still very applicable. And what I would suggest, if this comes out before we meet again, I would suggest reading through it. I would look at the RFQs, the questions from last year. And I would begin to go very carefully through it, because once you get into that webinar, it goes fairly quickly. And there may be some fine points that you'll miss, particularly if this is your first one or you haven't responded to one of these grant proposals for a while. You may want to look at this and read it several times and see what's different than the last time. If you submitted previously, what is different about this one? And if there's some things that leave you hanging, for example, questions about your curriculum, what type of curriculum can you teach, how that works? They've got certain amounts of funds allocated to each type of topic area in the curriculum. That's always been a source of question. For example, if I'm training water gardens, does this fit in this particular area, or is it going to put me into a problem area where there's not been a lot of funds allocated? So I would start to get those questions before we do the webinar, because at some point in that webinar, you're going to have a chance to answer questions. And if you haven't gone through it and you haven't thought through your grant and what type of, you may be proposing a particular curriculum, but it's kind of sketchy. Is that one of those areas where there's not a lot of money allocated to it? And you may say, you know, this is very important. You don't want to be teaching, say, air programs, and there's no money in the grant for air programs. So they may not be able to fund curriculum and air programs. So you may want, that's just an example, you may want to think about what you're going to be training and kind of walk it through. And when that webinar comes up or when you have a chance to ask questions, because it's a public forum, they can answer questions. One thing about RFAs is that you can go to your regional coordinator, and in fact, now is a good time. If you haven't contacted your regional coordinator and their contact information is in each PLC notes, contact them and just, or drop them an email and say, just want to let you know we're planning on submitting to the RFA this round. If you have a list, a mail list, or any sort of contact list, here's our contacts. They may call you up or they may say, great, we've got a regional listserv and we're going to put you on that. Some of the regions may have their own webinars. Now, the way assistance works. Once that RFA goes out, the federal employees cannot talk to you about your specific situation. They can talk to you about the grant and the grant application requirements, and they can clarify things. But if you have a particular thing about your situation, they really can't talk to you about your grant. And we can talk about, in a public forum, now they can talk about questions. This is why I'm suggesting and spending some time to get your questions out, because if you ask a question in a public forum, they could, as long as everyone has access to that public forum, they can do that. But you, if you were to call them later, they may not be able to respond to you. One other option is we can talk in a public forum on the PLCs about general issues. There might be questions about curriculum or some other question that we might be able to get the answer. So before you go too far along, when you get this RFA, just do some homework and start thinking it through. You may also start, and we have talked in the notes about getting your team together, what kind of team you're going to build. And you may want to give them some copies of the RFA and let them look through it. Oh, of course, particularly you, the grant writer, whoever's going to be writing that grant, they need to really be in on that webinar when it's announced so that they can also clarify questions. And, of course, as we've said in the PLC notes, you need to think ahead from right now, even before this is issued, all the way to the day after you submit that grant and you push the button on the computer and it's submitted to grants.gov, you have to ensure that you have a clear path. Whoever is going to submit your grant for you, in the old days, we just used to write them and send them in. No more. Right now, you've got to go through SAMS. You've got to, of course, to do that, you have to get your DUNS number, which you may have all of that. You have to get grants.gov. You've got to have your passwords up to date, and those expire on a regular basis. So someone said, well, don't worry about it. We submitted a grant 2 years ago, or last year we submitted a grant. Well, the question is, have you been on it? Because they may go on it, and if they wait to the last minute, they find out their password's expired, and they can't get on it. So do a walkthrough just to be safe so that you haven't done all this work and then find out at the last minute your grant's not submittable or there's a problem submitting it. In fact, we always, and we'll talk about this later, we always say, finish when you do your planning for writing your grant, have your deadline, hard deadline, a week before it's due. So you could, if you run into some problems or last-minute glitches, you could still recover. It's just a risk-reward thing. It's time to think about now. And, you know, why wait when you can do those things now, even before the grant came out? Have any of you got any questions on that RFA process or how that may work? We will have plenty of time to talk to EPA about that. Once it's issued, I want to speak a little bit, and we won't have a lot of time because I want to get around to what everybody's doing. We're going to start addressing these issues of the ranking criteria, and we're going to start through the PLCs coming up. We're going to start talking about these key components, and these are relevant to whether you've got to resubmit for a grant this year or it'll be next year. It's a good time to start thinking about these. Predominant in this program is partnerships and leveraging. And as you look through that grant that you'll be looking at, the RFA, you'll see a lot of, out of 100 points, almost 30 of those points have to do with ranking criteria regarding partnerships or leveraging. And we, at HMTRI, way back, we've divided the whole process of implementing a successful grant into 8 critical components. And it gives us a chance to talk about these critical components as we do these PLCs and we develop assistance materials. But those include things like doing your labor market and your community assessments. Partnership development would be another critical issue. Leveraging, student recruitment is another critical issue, which includes recruitment screening and assessment. Curriculum development would be another one. Life skills and student retention is another critical issue. placement and tracking your students when they graduate, and then sustainability of your program. And these are critical issues that we've identified that if you do all of these things and you apply proper attention to them, we find that successful grantees in the past have paid proper attention to all these critical issues, and they've been very successful. And when you hear these two words, you're going to hear from now on things like critical issues and then best practices. Best practices, when we identify a critical issue, we try to establish some best practices. And what best practices are grantees who have found that these practices work well for them. They don't necessarily apply to everyone because everyone's different. But one of the things about this program is you can't develop a canned proposal. And a long time ago, we took the stand that we really can't look or evaluate proposals because everyone's different. And what makes your program so unique is going to be your target group, who you're recruiting, the type of training you're going to be providing, how that fits into your community and the jobs that are in your local community, and that changes. There are some general things that are similar, like 1910-120, you know, everyone needs has a whopper. Maybe there's some other things like confined space or OSHA 10, maybe OSHA 30, maybe something different, but everyone really gets into individual things. But let's go back to those general categories called ranking criteria. And we actually have two of them. We call it partnership development and leveraging. And really, they're the same thing. They're very similar. And what are we talking about? We're talking about every partnership that you're going to need to make your grant successful. And the one thing about partnerships is when you partner, you're also leveraging your program. And the question is, well, why do you partner? It's basically to leverage your program. And when the RFA comes out, if it's similar to in the past, they assign about 26 points out of 100 to types of partnerships, whether they're working with local government and local remediation projects or whether they're talking about community partnerships or employer partnerships. And they're also, of course, assigning another three to leveraging. And I think you could respond to both of those, all of those ranking criteria similarly. They're very, very important. And it's logical. With a grant of $200,000, you really can't make this work without tremendous leveraging. And you can't get leveraging without partnerships. And mm-hmm. So we really have to figure out how do you take this little program and make it a big program. And you have to, again, reach out in all sorts of ways. And we break this into several types of partnerships, and we'll talk about this in the notes, but you've got these supporting partners, and there are people like the government, the mayor's office, faith-based organizations in your communities, neighborhood groups, people who are supporting your program. They know it's going to be good for you. They know it's good for the community. There may be employment services. There's financial partners who, to be honest, they're giving you grants, and there might be other grants that are support partners. They're not one thing about EPA grants and all federal grants, you can't duplicate exact efforts. In other words, you can't have this grant and have another grant that does exactly the same thing. But you could have synergistic effects from two grants. So you may have three or four or five different grants that are supporting the kind of the same general clause, but they're all different. And these are these supporting partners that make a small program gigantic. And those of you who are on the phone, whether it's Auburn or Recycle Force or Cypress Mandela, they all say, and many of them say, it all goes into one pot. And that's kind of a general term. It goes into a similar pot where you're benefiting your facilities and your critical mass for your instructors to be able to support a 300,000 square foot training facility, or you can't do it on a $200,000 grant, let's face it. So these supporting partners are so important. Then you have a whole bunch of in-kind services, and these are people who are like your advisory committees, your advisors. there, and some of these partners overlap. Your grant writers, they cannot be on the payroll to write grants. They can't be supported by EPA funds, but you've got grant writers that are expert, and they're going to be the ones that'll do the wordsmithing on your grant proposal. They're providing this particular EPA grant. They're not supported by the EPA grant because they can't be, but they're providing in-kind services to help your program get off the ground. And there's a whole cadre of those, whether they're, as I said, advisors, advisory committees. They may even be some consultants, but we have to be careful there. You can't have quid pro quo where a consultant is helping you out in some way with the understanding that he's going to be doing your training. You can't do that. You could certainly, though, get advice from consultants with no strings attached. And there's another issue with that. Then we've got these contractual partners, which are your training consultants. You need an RRMP or asbestos, OSHA courses. You will need certified instructors, and you may be reaching out very high likelihood to consultants. Now, those have to go through federal procedure guidelines, three essentially, at least three requests, a request for proposals, three bids, and an evaluation. There's nothing that says you can't do that before you write your grant, though. So you could get them on board now. And I've said this before, it's just this little tip. If you could get them on board now, and you're going to tell me right off the bat, well, wait a second, I don't have the money. How am I going to contract to a contractor? No, with a contingency clause that you get the grant. By the time you start training with a contractor, it may be a year away from now, 9 months to a year when you'll actually be doing training. But you can bring them on board. You can do a competitive bid and put all of those parameters in your RFP. You could vet him and bring him on board. Now, our old grantees who are re-upping already have these people on board, so they don't have to go out necessarily for a rebid. But if you're brand new and you're doing this, you may want to go out and line up some contractors and get them on board right now. The nice thing about that is if they're on board now, you could include them in your proposal that they've been vetted and they are now part of your organization. If you have not got them on board, you really can't use their credentials when you write the grant. So you can't say, well, we've had 20 XYZ company has had 20 years of experience, and they've got our RRMP certifications. You can't say that unless you've done a competitive bid and they're on board. What you might say is, well, we're going to go out for bid and get someone who's got this type of experience. But you're going to have to do some homework to see who's out there. That if you're going to, as part of your experience, if you're going to present credentials of a trainer, you've got to make sure he's on board or have some sort of wording in your grant that you're going to go out for bid before they're brought on board. And then, of course, the other partners are your employer partners. And these are probably the most important of all. And, of course, when you go into ranking criteria, if it's similar to last year, they rank about 12 points for that and totally justified. Your employers are as much partners as your contractors, your in-kind partners, your advisors, and your supporters. They are the whole reason for being. If you can't place your students, you've got no program. So you will, again, we're trying to line up our employers way before we write the grant, way before we're going to have graduates to graduate. And what you're looking for, again, you always have to qualify, and I know it's difficult to say, well, I'd like you to join our team, but we don't even know if we have the money yet. But that's what you need to do. So you need to line up your employers. This is particularly, I'm talking to people who have never applied before. If you've got a track history, you know, you've got your employers lined up, and you may want to expand those employers, but you can't include them in your grant proposal unless you've got them lined up. And as we get closer and start talking about writing your grant, you're going to want to list the name of those employers. So unless you've got them lined up, you can't include them in your grant. You can't start listing a bunch of employers in town as, say, these are our supporters and our partner employers. And in fact, often they may want either a commitment letter to look at your graduates or some sort of MOU on your partners if you're going to put them in the proposal. So what I'm saying here, and I'm going to wind this up so we could talk a little bit about what's going on right now, and we'll continue this on the next one, but what you want to do is start laying this groundwork on partnership development. And don't be afraid to start reaching out and saying, one, we're going to apply for this proposal. Two, we don't know if we're going to get it, and it's going to be a long way. It may be a while before we get it, but we need your help because we can't get it unless we have your support now. And all of this is contingent on us getting the money. And as you get them, you keep, if you get a positive response, you push to the next level. Oh, I'm glad you're happy to support us. Will you be on our advisory committee? Would you like to, would you be interested in training in kind? Would you have some facilities you could donate? Do you have old equipment you're laying around? This is all really important when you start talking about leveraging. So first you judge, is there any interest at all? And they may say, well, we're just not there. We're not there right now. Or they may say, yeah, we're interested. I can't give you a firm commitment now, but maybe in a little bit when we talk about this more, I'll give you a commitment. So you go to you tighten the screws a little bit, go to the next level of commitment. And if you hit enough people or if you hit the right people, you're going to have a cadre of really good partners who will be leveraging, providing advisory committees, and you'll be able to hit them up for an MOU or a commitment letter or some letter of support that you could put in your proposal, which is going to give you the winning proposal for against someone who doesn't do that. So just before this all comes out, it's something to do right now. It's a good time to start wordsmithing some letters that you can start sending out and start lining these up before this RFP, because once the RFA is out, the clock is ticking. And of course, 2 months away, it's not so bad, but it just keeps going. And the closer you get to it, the harder this becomes. So we're going to talk about this more next week, and we'll start talking more about ranking criteria, and perhaps the RFA will be out. But I do want to spend a few minutes, and I don't want to take a lot of everybody's time today, is just a rundown of where we're at now versus where we were at 2 weeks ago. And for those, Ken came in early, and we had a little discussion about what's going on in Indianapolis. And Paul, you might be able to add to that. I think it sounds like things are going. They're moving from a I don't know if there's five stages in Indiana, but they're coming up to stage four. Now they're a social enterprise, so they've kind of been open. They're expanding their work hours from 8 to 3 to like 8 to 4:30, which is almost a full schedule. They're doing social distancing. It seems like things are rolling along pretty well. Do you want to add to that a little bit on how you feel about your program over at Recycle Force?
Hey, Paul, are you there? I don't know. Paul may have stepped out. I don't know, but
okay. Well,
certainly, I'll expand. Are you there, Paul?
That's cool. Is this Ken?
Yeah. Can you hear me? Okay.
Yeah, we're good.
We've actually been an essential employer since this whole COVID-19 thing. But we also have had half of our staff working remotely. So as we continue to follow the CDC guidelines for opening up states and cities, we're right now at I think we just entered stage four. So our we started off at 8 o'clock to 3 o'clock, and now we're going back to 8 to 4:30. And as Mike said, you know, we're a social enterprise, so we stay open, helping the city of Indianapolis with some of our trained employees to help clean up the city and clean up offices or whatever the case may be, while other people are on the sideline waiting to come back. We've always been ready because we serve a homeless population and ex-offenders, which is a population that's generally underserved anyway. So when we cities and states begin to open up and the economy begin to adjust, the folks that are usually, last on the list to get employment are the ex-offenders and the homeless population. So we're kind of standing in front of the line now and saying we're here to help clean up your offices, clean up buses. We have employers that have always came on board because we also act as a alternative staffing agency waiting to fill positions that may be traditionally hard to fill. So now we're like raising our hands saying, here we are, here we've been here, and now we're ready to go. So we use the philosophy that if we stay ready, we don't have to get ready, and we let other people as, you know, things have changed tremendously. So, you know, you're going to see things change in your state and your city. You know, what's becoming more important than anything is social distancing, sanitation, cleaning, and you got to have a population of people that's ready to do that. So with our HAZWOPER, our RECRA, our OSHA safety training, we're now taking advantage of a word called exploitation. So we're exploiting what we have done and try to position ourselves to create more partnerships during this time. So it'll only enhance what we're getting ready to do with the RFA. And if we have partners that we've had before the pandemic, we're expanding our partnership. So I won't take up any more time, but we are positioning ourselves to make the changes that are going to be necessary as we're going forth.
Now, Jake, how are things going in Alboro? You were doing last time we talked to you, you were doing a lot of things digitally.
So,
how are things shaping
Jake,
up from 2 years ago?
Jake, is it okay if I take this one? I don't know if Jake's on the line. Okay, cool. There he is. So we are meeting with our trainer on Monday to officially schedule training for August, which is good news. Our county has been in what our governor is calling the green phase now for about 3.5, approaching 4 weeks. Of course, there has been an uptick in cases, but they're all tied to people going to the beach and then coming back to Allegheny County. But we're moving forward as if we are not going to be in the yellow or red phase in August. And this week we wrapped, actually just today, we wrapped the first portion of an in-person virtual training and screening with a group of 14 to 16-year-olds. So I feel like if that worked well with 14 to 16-year-olds, we kind of use that as our pilot, we'll be able to move forward in August when we officially start recruiting our cohort for the EPA grant. So we're definitely moving forward and thinking about, you know, how we can plan for the fall, maybe how we can involve some elected officials, because it's interesting, the training for these certifications is not considered essential by the governor, but the positions that we would place individuals into are considered essential by our governor. So we're going to try and see how we can perhaps work around some of that if a second wave were to come back in the fall. But I think what's been key for our virtual trainings this week for our 14 to 16-year-olds was the ability for Avoli to drop off technology to the young people. So Wi-Fi hotspots, iPads, and laptops where needed. So would definitely recommend to any grantees to consider that if you can, as part of your budget or as leverage from another organization or foundation in your community, because that's been really essential to making sure that our young people are engaged. I don't know if Jake had anything to add.
How much phone versus computer? Do you do anything with phone, or have you, once you get computers in everyone's hands or desktop tablets, you're able to shift over digitally? Is that how you're operating?
Yeah, it's mostly been all laptops and iPads. We did have a few young people, though, this week. I think they're so used to calling in on their phones to school that they asked if they could use the Zoom app on their phones. But we tried to coach them into how to use it on a laptop because we do think that that's going to be an important skill moving forward in this virtual world that we're in, is how to join a video call on a computer.
How about Kansas? How things, we were talking a little bit about how things are going in Kansas. How are things over there?
Well, yes, Kansas City, Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes, we're working toward a reopening. We've been doing a lot of training, you know, that's online based, and then we also there's some CDL Class A training that's been going on. Our focus really has been to utilize those that we can within the parameters of what's available in terms of training within the guidelines that is recommended and needed. In addition to that, we have started. We're going to start reopening. I think on July the 6th is the anticipated date to where you know there can be limited access of customers that come into the facility and staggered shifts and things of that nature, and along with associated practices, social distancing and other practices. Right now, the facility and our facilities are being modified with plexiglass barriers and things of that nature, and that's ongoing at this time. So we're moving toward reopening and gearing up in ways that have been I think those some things happen pretty quickly, like the online and the IT, and then some things happen a little more slowly. And we're gearing up to do the you know the realm of services that we can given the situation.
Yeah. Anyone else? I just had a chance to talk to these three people before the meeting started. Anyone else? Have anything to report? And I would like to hear if anyone says we're just dead in our tracks right now. Any comments? Okay.
So, hello, this is Ronique. Hello?
Yes, Ronique. Yes, Ronique.
Hey, how you doing? How you doing, Mike? This is Ronique. Currently, right now, we're planning restructuring our cohort. We're going to start later than usual because of the interruption from the COVID. And we're going to actually be moving to more of we're going quarterly. You know, before this, we just ran two classes, fall and spring. So we've been talking to our contractor. Myself and my program director in my department. We're going to start July 27th, and instead of 5 weeks, we're going to go 4 weeks, and we're going to run two cohorts. Prior to this, I recruited about 20 people, so we're going to split that number and go 10 and 10. We may not be able to provide summer certification just, you know, because we outsource forklifts and we outsource a soil sampling certification. But we're in the process now trying to reengage those program managers to see if they're going to let people on due to physical distancing. But that may not be, so we may have to go without two of those certifications. Prior to that, all our graduates received 12 certifications, so that may just, you know, drop it down to 10. As long as they still have, you know, their HAZMAT 40, they'll get a construction OSHA 10, OSHA confined space entry, and also bloodborne pathogens. But everyone, as everyone pretty much already knows, everyone who graduates from the program is pretty much certified as a microbial worker. So they can get into things that are similar to what construction force or recycle force is doing. And that's where we're at right now. So I've reengaged a lot of people in these last couple of weeks, just to make sure they're still interested in the program. It is the new norm. You know, some individuals, it was like pulling teeth, just trying to convince some individuals that we're not going to be in this forever. Some people are comfortable with just getting assistance from the government, and that's understandable. So many people are getting good money without really doing anything. But, you know, it's not going to be forever, you know. So, you know, we still got good numbers. We have some partnerships with our local social services, and they're going to put a couple of people in our cohort. You know, that's where we're moving forward.
Well, that's an interesting concept you brought up. You're doing bloodborne pathogens, and now that qualifies them to be a microbial worker, which would allow them to clean buses and do all kinds of
Yeah, exactly. So with the microbial worker, we got microbial work, excuse me, with the blood-borne pathogens, OSHA 40 HAZWOPER,
OSHA 10 HAZWOPER could find space, OSHA 10 has, probably.
And the asbestos worker, yeah, they'll be classified as microbial workers. So, you know, they can go in and, like so many companies, even janitorial companies that are doing the cleanup in our area, in our surrounding area. And we're in Wilmington, Delaware. So our tri-state areas, you know, Philadelphia, New Jersey, a couple of companies that already reached out to me wanting to come in and engage some of our past graduates, even our recent graduates, and even want to partake in as a keynote speakers just to tell about their business and what they're doing. So a large company that I got in contact with in New Jersey, Clean Harbor, I believe it is.
Right.
So, yeah, you know, I mean, it's the – and moving forward from this, we'll do it quarterly, and we'll probably only just get 10, probably do 10 for physical distancing purposes. And also just to get a smaller cohort, we're just putting more out, getting our same number, probably even a little bit more.
Yeah. That may open up a whole new era of possibilities for graduates, this whole area of decontamination.
Yeah, but, yep.
Because yeah. Companies have to do
it. I mean, it is what it is that it takes. It is what it is, and it takes what it takes. So, I mean,
yeah.
I didn't have to sell. I think the program really sells itself. But, I mean, just for individuals who are out of work, it takes away. Traditionally, we run a 5-week program. So the first 2 weeks is our workforce readiness, social, emotional learning, life skills component, soft skills component. But it's really to the point where I have them being able to find their value, you know, and get them to commit to themselves, you know, engage them appropriately so they can get that buy-in so they lock in for the 3 weeks that the actual contractor is there. And also, I mean, it can be – I talked to someone last week. This woman was working for 10 years. She was working in a bakery. She was doing some cleaning in a bakery, and she doing different things in a bakery. And she heard, she seen one of our ads on social media that someone had actually reposted. And she was a female, so she had her questions. She had her questions just about, you know, females being able to work at that capacity, and also how old were the participants and the students in there. You know, and I congratulated her. I said, man, but those questions that you're asking right now, they see that you're committed and you're really wanting, you're trying to get on track. You know, you're trying to find, you know, find yourself, but you're trying to reinvent yourself. So, I mean, I could just tell you want better for yourself. You know what I mean? So we had a great conversation. I think due to that engagement in that conversation, she definitely, it sold her, you know? So, I mean, I told her, even if she doesn't join this program, whatever she's going to do from here on out now, she's going to be successful, you know, because she's committed. Because you can't really commit to people unless you don't find it committed to themselves. You go. Go ahead, Mike. I'm sorry.
Well, the hardest part with social distancing and trying, you can't do this digitally, is a team circle. You can't develop team loyalty and team building over a computer. And I think that's the challenge of maybe getting these programs started and being able to at least social distance in a circle, or somehow you have to, this challenge of building your team and getting them motivated without getting them too close together. That's tough.
And you're tough. So right. But even our last conversation, or not the last conversation, but one of the conversations we had before on the PLC meetings, like the engagement is so very important. Maybe social media, email, Zoom calls, like even our terminology is power within words. And the last time I spoke on this, I did not use the term social distancing. But the people that we're engaging, and as I speak to them, I speak to myself, we need to be more social. And that's why we're engaging them on social media. And I use the term physical distancing. You know, we have to be apart, and we have to restructure our classrooms, and we have to restructure like how they're going to be in the building. But I'm going to leave it open for to be as social, more social as you really want to be. You know, you can call me, you can email me, you know, you can ask me a friend, you can invite your friends here. You know, we're going to find a way to figure it out, you know. But, I mean, it starts with that. Like, we really have to be more social. You know, and this is the way you have to talk more just to engage the people.
Well, one of the best practices I thought was very, very important, and especially with ex-offenders or people having problems with their career, is the grantees were able to do a circle every morning. Some do a physical activity. They do a circle every morning, and the elders are talking just off the record about anything to young people in that circle. And there's no agenda, no schedule. They're just BSing about everything. And that's really, really powerful. And then, so the trick is, can you preserve these circles? Maybe people have to stand further apart and wear masks. Can you keep this informal loyalty and discussions? Because the elders support the young people who may have not realized that their whole future is still ahead of them, you know, and to learn from their experiences. And that's a challenge, but it sounds like you're addressing it, though.
Trying to, Mark, just trying to figure it out, you know. But I mean, you know, at the end of the day, a lot of people that we engage in, people, you know, our target market, man, they say it all the time, like, real recognize real. They know who is being real with them. They know who genuinely cares, and that's why myself, I'm able to engage them in a certain way. I'm able to redirect them. I'm able to, you know, confront them when they're not, you know, meeting expectations of the program and even my expectations as being an instructor. You know, I sit in during when the contractor's there. You know, I'm not the most intelligent person. I barely graduated high school, and I barely graduated college, and that's why I really value secondary education. You know, even after this, I promote a lot of individuals, like, if they want to go to our community college and get another trade, you know, just put another tool in their toolbox, or even other certs in construction, things of that nature, or in getting out in the working world, but doing it right, with financial literacy, saving their money, because they're in a situation where they make a lot of money, or they could, but it doesn't matter just because, of, you know, they don't have no value of money, you know. It doesn't really matter.
Well,
but,
Renee.
Sir. Yes.
Renee, you may talking about degrees, but I'll tell you, you're doing something much more important. You're saving lives. And just like a lot of people on this call, you're saving lives. And I'll tell you, when we get together at all grantee meetings, you're in the business of saving lives. These people, a lot of the people that are going through your programs have no lives, or they're negative. And, you know, when they come back and tell you, there are so many stories where people end up with getting good jobs, getting married, changing their lives. I mean, you can't ask for more than that. I don't care how many degrees you have. You're saving lives. So, well, listen, anybody else want to contribute anything before we hang up today? Okay. Well, the next one is on the 6th. Hopefully the RFA will be out, and we'll be reconvening, same place, same time, July 8th. So hope you all have a good session. Any comments that you can write, send them to Heather, send them to Steve, or just respond to the notes, and we'll make sure that all goes to the same place so we can get this all grantee meeting off the ground. So till then, I'll see you guys next time.
Okay, thanks, Mike.
A couple good weeks. Okay, thank you.
Thank you all. Have a good day.
All right.
Thank you.